Blog Talk Radio.
Oh.
Welcome, welcome to the Conscious Creative. That was Alicia Keys, Caged Bird, and we thought that would be very fitting to go into our first topic of this afternoon, of this evening. I'm one third of your host, Love Rains. You can follow me on Twitter at I Am Love Rains, I-A-M-L-O-V-E-R-E-I-G-N-S. And you're listening to the Conscious Creative on Blog Talk Radio. Brought to you by Get Lifted Radio. I'm joined, of course, by our other host, all the way up in Atlanta. There's Sage Mayotte. Sage, how are you feeling this afternoon?
Feeling great. Good afternoon, everyone.
Cool beans, cool beans. And then also in Jacksonville, we have Marie Girojo. How are you feeling, love?
I am great, sitting outside on my porch watching the rain fall, and I'm looking forward to today's show.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So for those of you who are joining in and listening in, if you're joining us via the phone, you can also log online to www.blogtalkradio.com/getlistedradio if you want to log online. And for those of you who are logged online, you can call in and if you have a question or you want to chime into our conversation, make sure you call us at 347-826-7536 and press 1 so that we know that you want to talk to us. I'm sure that this first topic that we're going to discuss has been on the hearts and minds of everybody this week. We're talking about the passing of legendary author, poet, actress, entrepreneur, just all-around phenomenal woman, Dr. Maya Angelou. So today we are paying homage to the legend and to the great woman that she was, the great woman that she is, and all that she left behind, and all of the jewels that she left each one of us. I know on a personal note, for me, for those of you that don't know, I do poetry and I perform constantly. Maya Angelou was actually the first poet ever that I was introduced to at 5. And her passing, it really hit home to me, and it really kind of hit me hard. But I look at it as, you know, she lived a great life, and she was also one of those people that you could just look to, you know, for inspiration, for words of wisdom, for words of encouragement. How did you ladies feel about her passing last week?
Well, I know for me, we spoke almost immediately, I think. You and I did, love, once we heard the news. And probably, like most people felt, for me, initially, Maya Angelou was not just my favorite poet. For years, she was the only poet that I knew because, you know, it wasn't something that I was necessarily that I had been exposed to as a child, and my love of reading poetry and short stories and novels came a little later in life for me. And so for a long time, the only poem that I was really versed in, the one poem that I knew, was Phenomenal Woman. And so her passing for me was significant. But at the same time, a lot of times when we lose someone that significant to our lives for whatever reason, we feel as if the earth has been robbed of something, and I didn't feel that. I felt the absolute opposite of that because she lived her life. She touched so many, and she'll continue to live on, you know.
Right.
And so I'm comforted by that. I am definitely comforted by that, and I started sharing, and it made me sad. One of my kids didn't know, asked if she were, I forgot what he thought her position was in our society, and then when I began to share with them, I didn't realize how much I knew about her personal life, about her journey, and most of that I learned through her book, I Know I Came For Things. So it's definitely a significant sadness that I felt, but I don't feel a sense of loss.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. How about you, Sage? When you found out about it, how did you feel?
Initially, I actually woke up to the news, and I can't say that I didn't cry. That's really how my morning started out, because I looked at I called her Mama Angelou. Angelou is what I referred to her as always, and I always felt a sense of connection to her because I could see myself in her stories and in her writing. But I'm very grateful to have gained an ancestor because we are even more connected to her now than we were before in the physical realm. So it was very saddening, but at the same time, I looked to her for inspiration because I, of course, am currently writing my own book, and just knowing my impact on lives, and it inspires me, her story, by simply not only teaching and giving things to people, but actually living. You know, she walked her talk. She lived what she wrote about. She lived what she talked about. And she never shied away from any of her experience. So definitely grateful to have gained an ancestor. And, look forward to continuing her legacy in any way possible, and in as many ways as possible.
Absolutely. Definitely. One of the things that, you know, of course, one of the things that I've been doing the past few days is not only, you know, I was very familiar with her biography and her life growing up, but of course it made you, in her passing, it kind of made me want to learn more and really kind of delve myself into her life. And one of the things that I didn't realize was that she served on two presidential committees. I didn't know that. Right, you know, she was also awarded the Presidential Medal of Arts in 2000, the Lincoln Medal in 2008. She's received 3 Grammy Awards. She was only the second poet to speak at a presidential inauguration. And of course, she was, for those of you that know, she was, or don't know, President Clinton actually requested her personally to speak at his inauguration in 93. She received over 50 honorary degrees and was a Reynolds Professor of American Studies at Wake Forest University. And, you know, just going over her life, man, and reading a lot of the things that she accomplished, you know, Sage, you're so right when you say that she not only talked the talk, but she walked the walk. And it's really not hard to see why Oprah, people like Oprah, looked to her and really considered her a mother figure and a mentor, because she truly did live the talk. She not only spoke about poetry and spoke about it as far as writing and performing, but she lived it. She was living and breathing poetry. And it's a blessing that we have been able to be exposed to her in our lifetime. And be able to share her work and continue on her legacy, you know. I do want to, let's go into, I want to share some of her work. I know, of course, a lot of people know Phenomenal Woman. It's so funny because when I was younger, it was a sight to see 5 and 6 year olds reciting Phenomenal Woman. And not only reciting it, but reciting it and embodying the attitude of it, you know, and the confidence of it. So it was definitely a sight to see. That was one of my favorite poems, or that is one of my favorite poems from her. But one of her other poems that I really, really, love is, let me say this before I go into this poem. What I loved about poetry was that it was kind of like no holds barred. She spoke what she felt. She said what she felt at any given moment, you know, and she not only lived it, like I said, but she embodied it. She embodied her poetry, man, and it was just such a blessing to be able to share in her poetry and share in her life. So I know that I'm one of the people who have been blessed and honored to just learn about her and know her. But one of the poems I love, it's a part of this poem, a part of the poem that I really like, and it's called On the Pulse of the Morning. So I'm going to share a little bit of it, and then we can go into some more. But it starts like this. A rock, a river, a tree, host of species long since departed, marked the mastodon, the dinosaur, who left dry tokens of their sojourn here on our planet floor. Any broad alarm of their hastening doom is lost in the gloom of dust and ages. But today, the rock cries out to us, clearly, forcefully, come. You may stand upon my back and face your distant destiny, but seek no haven in my shadow. I will give you no more hiding place down there. You, created only a little lower than the angels, have crouched too long in the bruising darkness, have lain too long face down in ignorance, your mouths filling words armed for slaughter. The rock cries out today. You may stand on me, but do not hide your face. Across the wall of the world, a river sings a beautiful song. Come rest here by my side. Each of you, a bordered country, delicate and strangely made proud, yet thrusting perpetually under siege. Your arm struggles for profit, have left collars of waste upon my shore, currents of debris upon my breast, yet today I call you to my riverside. If you will study war no more, come, clad in peace, and I will sing the song the Creator gave to me when I and the tree and the stone were one. Before cynicism was a bloody spear across your brow.
You can't take it online.
And when you knew, and when you yet knew, you still knew nothing.
Online is full. Online.
The river sings and
learning.
Sings on. There is
everyone
a true journey to respond.
Not just per se.
The singing river and the wise rock. So say the Asian, the Hispanic, the Jew, the African, and Native American. the Sioux, the Catholic, the Muslim, the French, the Greek, the Irish, the rabbi, the priest, the sheep, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher, they hear. They all hear the speaking of the truth. Today, the first and last every tree speaks to me. Come to me here beside the river. That, I don't know what that poem did for y'all, what it does for y'all, but it really speaks to me. You know, it really spoke to me in what she was saying, and it kind of makes you, what I loved about her poetry is that it makes you listen. It makes you want to learn more. It makes you want to research, and it makes you want to go into your history. What did you feel about that poem, Sage?
I really like it. It was a lot of noise in the background, so I really didn't hear everything. But it's definitely a profound piece, such as all of her work has been. It was honest and from her experience, so that's always appreciated.
Definitely. Do you have a favorite poem of hers?
I do have quite a few favorite poems of hers, none that I have pulled up currently, but yes, Phenomenal Woman obviously is one that we always, as women, relate back to. So if I had to say one right off the dome, that would be the one.
Definitely. I think that's a lot of people's favorite poem for her. It's so profound, man, and it definitely resonates. I want to go into I think we lost Marie. Marie, are you there?
I am here. I don't necessarily, and I agree, I have lots and lots of favorite poems, but I'm more of a quote type of woman. She, my aunt came out with a book maybe 2 years ago called Mom and Me and Mom. I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, she has a fantastic line, a few lines or so, that talks about relationships, and it talks about the significance of love and the power of love. And it says, love heals and liberates. I use the word love, not meaning sentimentality, but a condition so strong that it may be that which holds the stars in their heavenly positions and that which causes the blood to flow orderly in our veins. And just that, I just think that speaks volume about what love should be,
right,
and a very sure and innocent form of love. And for me, that's one of my favorite poems from, one of my favorite quotes from one of her books.
Definitely. And matter of fact, let's go into that. Let's hear that in her own words, how love liberates. So we're going to go into that. This is a snippet from Oprah's on her own network. She does her life classes, her life master classes, and this is one of the snippets from that, a brief snippet from that. So let's go into that really quickly. And again, this is Love Liberates.
Oh, I am grateful to have been loved and to be loved now and to be able to love, because that liberates. Love liberates. It doesn't just hold. That's ego. Love liberates. When my son was born, I was 17. My mother had a huge house, 14-room house. At 17, I went to her and said, I'm leaving. She asked me, you're leaving my house? And she had live-in help. I said, yes. I found a job, and I've got a room with cooking privileges down the hall, and the landlady will be the babysitter. She asked me, you're leaving my house? I said, yes, ma'am. And you're taking the baby? I said, yes. She said, all right, remember this. When you step over my door sill, you've been raised. You know the difference between right and wrong. Do right. Don't let anybody raise you and make you change. And remember this, you can always come home. I went home every time life slammed me down and made me call it uncle. I went home with my baby. My mother never once acted as I told you so. She said, oh, baby's home. Oh, my darling, Mom's going to cook you something. Mother's going to make this for you. Love. She liberated me to life. She continued to do that. When my son may have been 5 years old, my mother would pick him up all the time and feed him. And I went to her once a month, and she would cook for me. So one day I went to her house, and she'd cooked red rice, which I loved. After we finished eating, we walked down the hill, and she started across the street. She said, wait a minute, baby. I was 22 years old. She said, wait a minute, baby. You know, I think you're the greatest woman I've ever met. She said, Mary McLeod Bethune, Eleanor Roosevelt, and my mother, you're in that category.
Wow. That gave me chills. That, wow. I'm tearing up. I don't know about y'all, but I'm really tearing up just listening to her speak. I always felt that way when she spoke anyway, but to listen to her, her life lessons, you know, it's never, you know how sometimes when we listen to our elders, a lot of times we feel like they're looking down on us, or they feel like, or we feel like they don't know what we're going through. But when you listen to Dr. Maya Angelou and you listen to her talk, it comes from just such a genuine place, and it comes from such a truthful place, and you have no choice but to listen and really take in what she's saying and really try to take heed. To take heed to what she's talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that one of the fantastic things about her and authors like her, Toni Morrison, other authors that I look up to, Edwards Dantecat, is another one. I think what it says is in a lot of their readings is you're literally watching the unfolding of their life. You know, you're literally watching the different steps that they're taking on their journey. You're reading it and with every line. In her book, I know why Kate Burt sings, she has a line in there that says, there's no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside of you. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, going through, and many women have, and many of us have, and I don't think it's just exclusive for women, but being able to talk about things that you've gone through in your life, whether it be on a literary scale or whether it's just you talking with your friends, and then understanding how necessary that is for healing, how necessary it is for growth. And I think in a lot of that, in a lot of her writing, she told that story because she gained her strength unapologetically from her truth. And her truth was raw in that first book. And she talked about being a teenage mother, and she talked about being abused sexually, and she talked about so many things. And then she went on and demanded the respect and demanded the place that she was already birthed into in this universe, because we all are.
Right.
And so as she went through her journey, as she went through the different places and shared those things with us, we were absolutely blessed by them. But not just blessed in a way that we should remain just sort of passive in our own lives, but also blessed in a way that we saw it unfolding for her, and then we want the same thing as it pertains to us to unfold for us as well. Because that's the blessing in it. It's not just reading it and allowing it to sit. It's reading it and activating it in our lives. And so when someone this significant goes on to the next life, and I sit back and I think about my connection with them, and whether it were a physical, personal connection or not, when I sit back and think about those things, I think about what I learned from that connection.
Right.
And what am I going to take? Because that's why we were connected in the first place.
Definitely.
So it's a beautiful thing in all of it, you know. We still find beauty even in death.
Right. That's true. Do you have a Shen, I was debating on if we should read Phenomenal Woman. I was thinking about it, like how they made us read it when I was in school. And I don't know, it's kind of crazy because I'm a little nervous about that.
I think everybody read that in school at some point.
Yeah.
Let's share a poem that maybe everyone doesn't know. You know, because like you said, everyone is very familiar with that one.
Right.
Everyone is very familiar with that first book. You know, let's share something that maybe someone didn't know.
Yeah, I'm going to read one. This is one that was in Poetic Justice, which is one of my favorite movies. And this is a poem that Janet Jackson read in, she read a portion of it in Poetic Justice, and it's called Alone. So it goes like this. Lying, thinking, last night how to find my soul a home, where water is not thirsty and bread loaf is not stone. I came up with one thing, and I don't believe I'm wrong, that nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. Alone, all alone, nobody but nobody can make it out here alone. There are some millionaires with money they can't use. Their wives run round like banshees. Their children sing the blues. They've got expensive doctors to cure their hearts of stone, but nobody, no, nobody can make it out here alone. Alone, all alone, nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. Now, if you listen closely, I'll tell you what I know. Storm clouds are gathering. The wind is gonna blow. The race of man is suffering, and I can hear the moan, 'cause nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. Alone. All alone. Nobody. But nobody can make it out here alone. Do you remember that one?
I do not. And actually, I'm constantly being told that I don't watch enough movies starring African Americans. And although I did see that movie, the only thing I can remember is the punani part at the beauty salon. That's all I remember. I don't remember anything else about that movie but her smelling her breath and saying it smelled like punani. That's all I remember. So maybe I'll watch it again. Maybe there are some parts that I should remember other than that, clearly.
That's funny. That's hilarious. I believe that poem is at I want to say it's at the beginning because I saw it. It came on TV not too long ago, and I believe that it was at the beginning of the movie. Let's go on to another clip.
Okay.
Let's see. This is one, and for those of you who want to hear the clips in their entirety, you can go to YouTube, of course, and just type in Dr. Maya Angelou, and I think one of the first things that comes up is a list of the clips from her life class with Oprah. But this is one that definitely, it really touched me. And it touched me in a way, I guess, because of I look at Tupac, and I've always looked at Tupac like a poet. And to hear her conversation with Tupac and how she literally was able to get to him, you know, and really let her wisdom shine through to him. So this is a small snippet from Dr. Maya Angelou, her conversation with Tupac. Here we go.
Are you a hard teacher?
Mm-hmm. I'm tough.
Yeah.
I'm tough. I'm loving. And I'm tough. I expect that I work very hard. And I want young men and women to know you have to work very hard. With Richard Pryor and Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, a number of the men, especially men, but the women too, they have come here to my home in North Carolina to talk to me and to ask me how do I feel about this or that. And they are all my children. I accept that they are my children. I accept that you are. You see, it's important for me to understand that. Then I must tell you the truth as I understand it. Because you may be the last person I'll speak to. Life is life and death is death. And so I must be telling the truth when I speak.
You did that with Tupac. When Tupac was a bit out of, what is in his own space on Poetic Justice, you pulled him aside and you instructed him.
Yeah.
What was he like?
I didn't know who he was, you know. I knew, I'd heard, he was into a big row with another young man. And so I said to him, may I speak to you? And he was cursing. Whew, I wouldn't give up. I said, I understand that, but let me speak to you. If these mother, I said, I got you. However, let me speak to you. And finally, I said, when was the last time anyone told you how important you are? Did you know our people stood on auction blocks, were sold, bought and sold? Did you know, so that you could stay alive today? And finally, he heard me and stopped talking and started to weep. And I put my arms around him, and I walked him back into the arena, and he quieted. And I went back to my trailer, and Janet Jackson came running in. She said, Dr. Angelo, I don't believe you actually spoke to Tupac Shakur. So I said, darling, I don't know Six-Pack. I had never heard of him. But, I mean, that wasn't in my world.
That's so funny to me. She said, darling, I don't know Six-Pack. But I love that. You know what I mean? She didn't have any reservations. Or she was like, not that she didn't care who he was. But she was coming from an honest place. Like, I'm speaking to you as my son. You know, I'm speaking to you to tell you something and give you something. It doesn't matter who you are. It matters. Mm-hmm. But right now, in this moment, I'm trying to reach you. And that's awesome to me.
Right. Well, and that's called sincere communication. I think it's definitely lost, has been lost for some time now, being able to communicate from a pure place, you know, without a lot of opinion, without a lot of negativity, just simply communicating because I want to see the best for you and allowing your words to say that. And I think that's the beautiful thing about poets to me. Most poets that I know, they are not only just creating, they're actually walking in and it's manifesting in their lives the things that they create. I am not necessarily, I love words and I love poetry. I like positive, what I perceive as positive poetry. There are some things that I cannot always take in because of my own sensitivity. But I think it is absolutely necessary that we understand the relationship between our words and our lives.
Mm.
And that we cannot separate the two, so that we cannot speak. One thing, like, you know, if we go back and we reread, I know what Cage Burke sang, even the poem, she got an award. I cannot remember, it goes back in maybe 1970, 71, and she had a collection of poetry called Something Before I Die. And maybe you can find it before I do, Karen. But I think very early on we understand it's sort of it's built inside of us, and we understand that we're destined for something. And I think as we continue on our journey and as it begins to unfold, we better understand what that thing is, whatever that is, and then we begin to pour into that. And the first thing we do, the most important thing that we do when pouring into that purpose, when seeing the part of the journey that we need to see at that moment, would be the words that we speak.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most detrimental, and it can also be the most powerful part of being successful, and whatever that is to you, you know, however you define success. But it's our words, and they are very powerful.
Right.
One of the things that I love to read. Big fan of Rumi, so I love poems, and no matter what sort of love it is, whether it's love of your community, love of your man, your woman, your child. I love reading love poems, and one of the poems that I like from Maya Angelou was the, I don't remember the name of it, and I'm looking at it, but I cannot find the name of the poem, but I'll read it, and I'll share it, if that's okay.
Yes, definitely.
And it goes, if that's okay. The first word is beloved. She's speaking to everyone, right? In what other lives or lands have I known your lips, your hands, your laughter, brave, irreverence, those sweet excesses that I do adore? What surety is there that we will meet again on other worlds, some future time undated? I defy my body's haste. Without the promise of one more sweet encounter, I will not deign to die. How fantastic is that?
Right.
And so we sleep on Maya Angelou when it comes to love poems, you know.
Yeah.
She's all about empowering the woman, has always been about empowering our community, but she also speaks from a very tender place in a lot of her poetry, that she's
right.
speaking to the hearts of the masses, not just the politics, not just, you know, the things that separate us from others, but also our hearts.
Right.
And that's also what makes her such a beautiful person.
Right. Definitely. I mean, she's just... you know, we could go on all day about how wonderful and amazing she is, and the priceless
mm-hmm.
jewels that she definitely that she left us, man. And I know that I've been you know, showering myself in Maya these past few days and throughout my life, really. You know, whenever there was
mm-hmm.
a time I felt like I needed some kind of inspiration or some kind of guidance or something, I would always just type in her name or go to one of her books and look for whatever it is that I'm feeling at that time. But let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, you know, the power of words. Let's talk about how much, not only how much we give power to words, but how much power words actually hold without us even giving power. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. The thing is, this is one of those things, and words are one of those things that whether we want it to or not, they will do exactly what they were designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And words give life. It's either life or death. And so whether it is something that we do willingly or whether we're just doing it kind of haphazardly, a lot of us have a you know, for instance, I think about now, you know, in this generation, how loosely we say bitch and hoe and nigga. How loosely we call our sisters and our brothers those names. And it's so common. It's kind of like saying, hi, girl, or hi, boy. You know,
right.
So it's a very common thing. And it's widely used with probably very little understanding of just how much death you're spewing onto that person.
Right.
And how much death you're, because it's a double-edged sword no matter who you are, because words will do exactly what they're set out to do. And so when you think about, let's just having a regular conversation, for me, and it's not always, but I try to be as mindful as I can with every word that I speak. And it's not always speaking what you feel, because we're taught that we should say what we feel no matter what. Well, and the same thing we talked about last week, sometimes it's best to sit back and just really sort of sift through what you're feeling and then figure out what's life-bringing and what's not. Because at the end of the day, what's the purpose of this conversation? At the end of the day, why are we having this discussion on this radio show today? At the end of the day, why is the person on the other end listening or calling in or wanting to? At the end of the day, we have to think about all of those things because they all matter.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And that's so true. And I found a quote by Dr. Maya Angelou about how she felt about words and the power of words.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, words are things. You must be careful about calling people out of their names, using racial pejoratives and sexual pejoratives and all that ignorance. Don't do that. Someday we'll be able to measure the power of words. I think they are things. They get on the walls. They get in your wallpaper. They get in your rugs, in your upholstery, and your
Absolutely.
Clothes, and finally into you. That's to me, that's such a profound statement. You know, that's they not only people use words constantly, not realizing that sometimes that those words, they stick. Words stick. And it may not affect you in a way that you think that they will until, you know, 10 years from now you're encountered by something and then something is triggered and you remember what your mom said to you at 12 or you remember what that boyfriend or girlfriend said to you just from using words. And it's such a powerful words are such a powerful tool. And I do believe what she's saying when she says that they are things because they are. And they do stick to you. No.
Yeah, and they're living. Words are living. And one it was very powerful when you said when you quoted when she said that they get in your wallpaper and they get in your floors. My grandmother has this old, and probably a lot of African American parents teach this to some degree, that being careful who you allow. Now my grandmother would say this, and I'll tell you what I got from it as I became an adult. My grandmother would say to be careful who you allow into your home. My grandmother is very religious. And so a lot of her understanding comes from good and evil. And there's no middle ground. It's just either you're good or you're evil. And so if she didn't know what church you went to, you were evil. If she didn't know your pastor, more than likely he ain't about nothing, no way. But she came from that place where I did find those words valid. Because, you know, as we get older, we realize that our parents meant well. But you have to be able to find out how it relates to your life today. Because I can't use every lesson, but I can use some of them, right? So
right.
What I got from that was I'm very careful who I allow into my space. Mm-hmm. And my space meaning my own personal space. To me, that's not my house. My house mm-hmm. is just walls. I live here. I'm a good steward over it. I try to take care of it because I was blessed with it. But it's not my home. My spirit resides in me. Nobody can touch that unless I allow them to. And so I allow people into my space as I will, into my home. You can come into my home. You can stuff with me. We can break bread and all that, and I will speak life the entire time. Now, you probably couldn't get close to me, but you're welcome into my home. So that's where I got what I got from that lesson. And also in that, because for her, it was about the words as well, and it was also about the action behind it, right? Because we can speak fantastic things. You know, when we're reading this poem, for me, if I had read Dr. Angelou's poetry and over the 80-plus years that she lived, and she has, you know, poetry about the Million Man March, and she has poetry about women being fantastic, but then in her own life did not mirror that in some way, meaning, you know, she was not about any cause in particular, or she did not give herself to her community. Then her words would mean nothing to me. Would they lose their power? I don't know. You know, probably not as far as, you know, it depends on who's reading it. But we have to also walk in those words that we speak. We have to also be whatever it is that we're saying that we are, you know. And so we cannot allow our words to be different from our actions, to be different from our prayers.
Right.
Because that it's in that place that we become stagnant. It's in that place that there's confusion. It's in that place that nothing seems clear to us because basically we have been separated. We've separated our spirits into so many different things because on one hand we're words and in another hand we're action and in another hand we're prayer and none of those things line up.
Right.
When you look at her life as much as we, because none of us know her personally, but from what we see, because,
right.
you know, it's only what how we perceive those things and I perceive her as being a genuine person.
Definitely.
So being a genuine person. And that's what I strive for every day, is to simply be genuine. I don't want, at the end of my days, for someone to be able to feel like they didn't know me.
Right.
You know, because I was so many different people. And it's important to be exactly who you are.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Definitely.
That's
and
what
I
get out of her poetry, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We had lost Sage for a little bit, but we got her back. Sage, are you there?
I am here.
we're just talking about the page, the power of words, and I was listening to Oprah's live class with Dr. Maya, and she was saying how Oprah was saying that one of the best things that she ever told her was, you know, when you're attempting to be genuine with people, it doesn't mean that you have to be perfect all the time. doesn't mean that you that you're not going to falter. It's not doesn't mean that you're not going to get angry with people. But at the same time, it just means that, you know, I'm done with you. And that's exactly what she said. Those were her exact words. Mm. I'm just done with you. It doesn't mean that I'm going to curse you and feel like, you know, or say that you have to, you know, or say anything negative about you. It's just in my life, you're no longer serving me purpose in my life. You know, so I'm not gonna curse you. I'm just done with you. And I want to go into another clip. It's so crazy, man. When we were finding these clips, I was just like, oh, I want to share that. But truth be told, you can really just go to YouTube. If anybody is out there listening, YouTube, and just type in Dr. Maya Angelou, her name, and all of these wonderful clips will come up of her. But this one I definitely want to share since we're talking about the power of words. Actually, before I go into that, how do you feel about that stage as far as the power of words?
I think we can, as I don't know if you've ever seen the quote, but they call it spelling because you're casting spells whenever you use your words. So I think words are very powerful. In every spiritual thought, in every spiritual school, they always emphasize the power of your words. They, whenever you speak, you're speaking either life into your desires or life into someone else's existence, or you're speaking death, or you're speaking less of, you're speaking away from love. So I think they're very important, which is why I'm not a woman of a whole lot of words. Because I like to think before I speak and be sure that what I'm speaking is in alignment with who I truly am.
Right.
I think so often we kind of jump and we speak based on reaction rather than simple action. So I think words are very important.
Definitely. So I want to go into the 9 words that changed Dr. Maya Angelou's life forever. So let's listen in.
As I'm reading the story about you and your mother, there's something about the story of your life that resonate with the stories of all of our lives.
Yes.
Is that why you wrote it?
Well, I don't know if that's why. That's one of the whys.
Yes.
One of the whys is because I can write.
And writers write.
And writers write. Also because I wanted to see my mother a little apart from me so that I could really love her life. And once you love somebody's life, it means you understand their life.
Yes.
And so you can understand why a person does a certain thing.
Because you say in the book, and I've heard you say before about her, that she was not a good mother for young children.
She was terrible.
Terrible for young children.
Yes. And my mother explained to me once, I asked her to never tell it again. She said when I was about two or three years old, that I had asked for something, and she didn't give it to me. And I had slapped her on her leg, and we were sitting on the porch, and she backhanded me off the porch into the dirt. She said I didn't have what was necessary for a young mother.
Yeah.
I didn't have that.
Yeah.
But this woman was the greatest mother of a young adult. Incredible. Just fantastic. She told me once when I was 22, we were walking down the street, and she said, "Baby, stop a minute." And I stopped. She said, "You know, I think you're the greatest woman I've ever met." I was 22 years old. And I looked down at this woman that people call Lady, because I had named her Lady.
Mm-hmm.
And also she owned hotels and things, and people admired her, and some were frightened of her, rightly. She said, Mary McLeod Bethune, Eleanor Roosevelt, and my mother, you're in that category. Give me a kiss. And she kissed me on my lips and went across the street to get in her car.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, suppose she's right. Suppose I really am going to be somebody.
Mm.
Maybe I should stop smoking and stop drinking and stop cursing. Well, I did stop cursing from that day to this. I still don't.
Really?
Really. It's rare for me to use a profane word. Very rare.
Wow. did you ladies hear that? Were you able to hear it clearly?
Yes.
What do you think about it?
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, we talk about her life right now, but, you know, we have to understand the life that happened that made her into what she was slowly becoming, you know? She didn't come from, she came from Arkansas, you know, she was an heavy-headed black girl who said that she always wanted her hair to somehow metamorphosize into something different when she woke up in the morning. She wanted a blonde bob or a blonde something, I read, on her. So, like, I'm never, when I hear her interviews and I read some of her things, I'm always transformed back to that first book where she outlines most of her formative years. And so you can understand, for me, you know, she was raised by her mother and her grandmother, why her heart is the way that it is, the way that she thinks, and who she actually was as a person, not just that poet and that writer and that activist, that she was a lot more than just those things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Sage, what about you? How did you feel about that?
About that, I love the honesty. I love the honest conversation that her and her mother were eventually able to have. And where she was able to tell her mother, you know, you kind of sucked whenever I was younger, but I appreciate you in your later years. And that just shows the power in honesty, in honest, open communication, and that shows the power in the relationship between a mother and her daughter, not just her daughter, but her children. And so I think it's imperative that we share what is looked at as the bad as well as the good, because in order to get to the good, you have to acknowledge what you view as being bad to transform that energy into something good. So I think that was a perfect example of how that, you know, happened in her life.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome. You know, I always think the things that Sage point out, and both of you point out, is awesome, and especially as it relates to the book that you're writing, Sage. Mm-hmm. I know you said mm-hmm. that you've used her. Sometimes as far as when you're thinking on things, you know, you go back to some of the words that she's written, and that would probably be very important. That honesty we spoke about last week when we were talking about Sage's book.
Right.
The necessity of honesty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's where her power was, you know, and that's where all of our power is in that, is being able to face whatever our truth is. And like just like the quote I said earlier, how damaging it can be to have these untold stories just sort of bottled up inside of us.
Right.
First thing, allowing them to be released. And release doesn't always mean, like, you know, cuss you out and fuss you out. It's just literally releasing it, letting go of it. And she let go of it. Whatever she felt, that bad part, she acknowledged it, and then she let go of it, whenever she let go of it, but it was used as energy to make her into that phenomenal woman that we all knew.
Yeah. So as far as, you know, let's talk about this. Let's just talk about this really, really quick, do a quick recap, Sage. As far as your book is concerned, now I know that Maya Angelou is definitely an inspiration of yours. Is there anybody else that you kind of think of that kind of sits in the back of your mind when you're writing your book and as you're going through finishing it and getting everything out there? Is there anybody along with Maya Angelou that you think of or that you look to?
To be quite honest, you come to mind. Anyone who's shared their story or who I've witnessed. who I've witnessed, I really like to have the rawness of it. So you know, Dr. Maya Angelou, I didn't imagine how many quotes of hers that I'd already used in the beginning of chapters and things like that throughout the book. And one of the things that I was looking forward to was presenting my book to her, because she inspired me to actually use my voice. I was not a mute, but I for a very long time I silenced my truth and did not use my voice for fear of confrontation. But in the book, I just think of all of the women, all of the children, all of the mothers who I know who struggle, but who also have a desire to get to the other side of that struggle. And so as I read through the book and finish, you know, put my finishing touches on it, some parts of it scare me because I'm like, what if they don't understand? What if some people are offended? But those conversations have to be had, and so that's where I really am in the book, and I really draw my inspiration from just regular day-to-day people like yourself and myself and anyone else who I've witnessed, observed from afar. I may not know you, but you may have shared something pertaining to your mother, videos that I've seen shared online and things like that that highlight the dysfunction and also the love between mother and daughter, so all of those. Because that's who I'm writing for, just regular people. But other books like Bell Hooks, I think of her.
Yeah.
Audre Lorde. Melissa Harris Perry from Sister Citizen. All of those. Akilah Richards, she actually has a new book called Radical Self-Expression Manifesto. It's a really good book. But I think of her because she's always speaking of radical expression for women and women's liberation and things of that nature. So, yeah, to answer your question, just, you know, regular old people like us.
Definitely. And I think, too, I want to go back to what you said about finding your voice and being able to really use your voice. Because I know that I struggled with that, too. When it came to sharing my words, I would always hold back for fear of, well, what if they don't understand me? You know, what if they don't really get what I'm saying? And one of the things that I've learned, you know, from Dr. Maya and others like Sonia Sanchez and Nikki Giovanni and others, you know, Sonny Patterson, there's true power in words. And one thing that I really definitely learned from Dr. Maya Angelou in particular was that your words are not going to penetrate everybody the same way. But it is important to believe and understand that they won't fall on deaf ears. They will reach someone. You know, there's each of us in our lives, we are meant to reach a certain amount of people. We have to understand and realize that we're not going to reach all of the people all of the time. We're not going to reach everybody, you know, at all times. So we have to understand that it's going to be some times where we find it difficult to get our point across. But the important thing is to keep talking. The important thing is keep writing, keep sharing, keep speaking, because someone needs those words. Someone needs to hear and understand where we're coming from and where what our perspective is. We have a few callers in line. So callers, thank you first for calling in and joining us on this conversation about Dr. Maya Angelou. For those of you who are listening in, if you want to talk to us, press 1 so that we know that you want to speak to us. So I'm going to call the last four of your number. So caller 4966, you are now live with the Conscious Creative. Are you there?
Greetings. How are y'all doing today?
Great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm enjoying the show very much.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in.
My name is TJ. I'm sorry.
Welcome, TJ.
I was calling in because I was having to listen to everything that you guys are saying, and I just had a thought about something that I experienced on social media this week upon learning about Mama Maya's passing, that the trend of comments by poets and people that consider themselves to be conscious or maybe more evolved than the rest of us, that were shaming people for their condolences or their expressions of sadness because they weren't poets or people that we might consider to be educated or that we might consider to be conscious, and it made me very sad. And I wasn't sure if you guys had witnessed any of it or seen any of it, but I thought it would be an interesting point to touch upon, you know, in this conversation. For me, reading it, what it brought to mind was I remember hearing in Charge of Heart, their pastor say, how you carry yourself is extremely important because you might be the only Jesus that anyone witnesses during the day. And what that references is that some people aren't going to crack a Bible and some people might never step foot into a church, but how you carry yourself as a Christian or as a Buddhist or as a Muslim or whatever your spiritual practice is should reflect from the inside out so that the people that you come across in your daily life get to experience it. And for many people, that's what Dr. Maya Angelou was. So even if they weren't poets or they never sat down and read a poetry book or they didn't go to open mic, a lot of times she was the only piece of poetry that anyone ever came across in their life. And that means something. And I feel like we should never belittle what little exposure they did have. If they were familiar with her name and they were familiar with a quote or a line or a singular great thing that she did, then that was enough. Right. Because at any given moment, something that she said or something that they read or a quote or an internet meme could affect the decision that they made in their daily lives. And that has the ability to change the whole world in an instant.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not big on social media as much as I used to be, but I definitely want to go and see what you're talking about because I haven't personally seen it. Have you ladies seen any of that?
I haven't. This is Marie. I haven't seen anything either. However, I agree with you, TJ, saying that sometimes, all the time actually, our actions are what probably touches people the most. Our words definitely, but our actions as well. And we have to keep in mind that we live seed lives, you know? And going back to what you were saying, faith, earlier, love, that because we're living seed lives, we don't always see the immediate manifestation of that seed that we planted. But it was a seed. And so if that seed fell on fertile ground, that fruit or whatever it is going to manifest in that person's life or in the lives of many, we may not ever get to see it.
Right.
And we have to be okay with that, with not being able to see it, because then it becomes about self. Then it becomes about us versus doing something to change the lives of others and ultimately making a difference in this world. And I am also very saddened by anyone expressing, you know, something so negative like that. And I do want, in the same token, I've seen the cliquish life that poets can sometimes lead. So,
right.
You know, for whatever that reason is, but it saddens me as well. And I have to go and look for it. Or maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just take your word for it. But it is a very sad thing.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, it is definitely sad to hear that, because it is unfortunate, TJ. You know, people don't realize sometimes, and it's not only just with poetry and what you were saying that people were what people have been posting or were saying about anyone who had anything to say about Maya Angelou. It's in our everyday lives. You know what I mean? People think that, oh, well, I'm in this position, so I have the right to say, well, you can't speak on it. Well, who are you to say that this person can't speak on it? You don't know what this person, what Maya Angelou was to someone else. You know, that one phenomenal woman could have been the only poem that someone ever heard their whole life, and that one poem could have changed their course. That one poem could have gave them the inspiration and the confidence to continue on. You know what I mean? So it's very sad when people kind of take that upon themselves to say, well, you're not in our clique. You're not a poet. So who are you to speak on whatever? Maya Angelou wasn't just a poet. She was a mother.
Exactly.
She was a teacher. She inspired us all. She not only inspired poets, she inspired mothers. She inspired teachers. She inspired presidents. She inspired, you know, everyone, straight, gay, black, white, it doesn't matter. She inspired us all. So it definitely is sad when to hear that's how people have been responding expressing their condolences, you know.
Yeah, indeed. I felt, because, you know, I'm not from the United States, so I didn't have the opportunity to grow up hearing Phenomenal Woman because I grew up on an island that is a British independent territory. And I'm that kid that got put out of history class for complaining that they didn't teach black history in a predominantly white school. So I was aware, but it wasn't something that was a part of my upbringing. So anything that I've learned, I've had to teach myself in my later years. So, you know, but I don't feel like I'm any less conscious or any less informed or I have any less right to mourn the passing of a great woman. And it just, it really, I was just like completely, you know, for people that consider themselves to be so evolved and to be so conscious, it was a low moment for the people that fell victim to that kind of judgment.
Yeah. One thing I've learned, PJ, is that the conscious people are not so conscious. For a long time, I know for me, I went around saying that I wasn't a poet, and people would actually get mad at me because I felt like I was too, I wasn't worthy of the name. And so the sad thing about it is now we have a kind of like an epidemic now where people are constantly saying, oh, well, I'm conscious, I'm this, I'm that. But they're abusing it. They're abusing the name, and they are abusing the so-called privilege of that in saying that they're conscious, because then, you know, just because you're conscious, does that mean that you have to look down on other people? Just because,
right.
That's the same with religion. You know, just because you're a Christian, does that mean you have to look down on people who are not? So it's definitely a sad thing. But thank you so much for calling in, PJ. Please continue to listen in, and we thank you so much for joining in on this afternoon.
No problem. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
All right. You have a great rest of the evening.
You as well.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and go into a break, and we're going to kind of switch gears here because we do have there's two parts to the show this afternoon. We are privileged to speak with author Robert J. Moore from Ohio. He's going to be joining us in just a few moments, and maybe we can get his take on Maya Angelou as well. But we also want to learn about him and learn about his books and his writing and his growing up as an author and getting into writing and things of that nature. But we're going to go ahead and take a break. We're going to go ahead and go into this song. I believe it pretty much embodies what we're trying to embody and cultivate here on the Conscious Creative. But this is a tribute to the one and the only great Dr. Maya Angelou. So this is Queen by Janelle Monáe and Erykah Badu.
Ooh, she's sure been saved. And I just tell them, cut me up.
Welcome back to the Conscious Creative. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon. For those of you that are just tuning in, we just did a tribute to Dr. Maya Angelou. I know that we could have gone on for forever talking about her life and her legacy and all that she is. But for those of you who are unfamiliar with her, please, I encourage you to just look her up and read some of her works, read her books, read all about her, because she was definitely an inspiring individual, and she continues to be and will continue to be a living legacy or a legacy for all of us. But right now we are switching gears. We are pleased to have on the show with us this afternoon author, and it feels good to actually have a male on the show. I think this is actually this will be the third time since our existence, correct me if I'm wrong, ladies, that we have had a male voice on the show. So I'm very excited about that. So please welcome from Lorain, Ohio, author Robert J. Moore. Robert, are you there?
I am here, and it's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you so much. So I'm going to read a little bit about you, Robert. I'm going to read a snippet of your bio, and then we're going to get right into it, okay?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Robert J. Moore, Jr. was born in Elyria, Ohio on November 13, 1979. Despite his birthplace, Robert grew up in the neighboring city of Lorain, Ohio, the same birthplace of world-famous authors Toni Morrison and Helen Steiner Rice. Robert had the benefit of growing up in a multicultural city. In Lorain, he was able to experience all that the world had to offer in just a few blocks. During his first year of college, Robert wrote an abstract that was selected to participate in the American Association for the Advancement of Science competition in 2001. His English professor convinced him that he had the talent to someday pursue a writing career. In his early 20s, Robert was forced to deal with a medical condition that forced him to stay in bed most of the day. During that time, Robert found peace in working on a manuscript. In 2008, Robert, along with four partners, founded Moore Writing Publishing and published his first novel, Till Death Do Us Part. Following the success of his first novel, Robert published a book of short stories, Listen to My Kaleidoscope. Robert currently resides in his hometown and continues to write. He is also the vice president of the International Writers Association and hosts a weekly podcast, the International Writers Association podcast. So again, welcome to the Conscious Creative, author Robert J. Moore.
Woo! You know what? That was so beautiful how you read that I hope I can get a recording of that. And whenever I go doing any public speaking, I'll just go ahead and play that on the iPod and then just come out after that. That was beautiful.
That would be awesome. Thank you. Thank you. So, Robert, tell us, you know, outside of your bio and what I just read, tell us about yourself. Who is Robert J. Moore?
Robert J. Moore is I was born a poor black child, like what's-his-face said in the movie, The Jerk. Grew up in Lorain, Ohio, same place as Toni Morrison. Life started off great, but then life changes. As we go through these ups and downs in life, I kind of went through those ups and downs in life where I was down at the bottom to where I was homeless as a kid, hungry, sneaking into nursing homes to find a bed to sleep in, dealing with a lot of things in life. And then I had some highs in those times, family, friends, people that cared about me. So I kind of experienced a lot at an early life. And how I got started writing was at the tender age of 8, I fell in love. And to show my love, what I did is I saved my lunch money for about a month. So that was a great weight loss plan for me at the age of 8. And I picked flowers from the fields outside. And then on Valentine's Day, I walked into my 8th grade class. I got on one knee, saw the woman of my dreams, and I said, Mrs. Dovin, will you be mine forever? And Mrs. Dovin, the teacher, looked at me. And she smiled, and she said, of course not, because I was a class clown, and she thought it was a joke. But I was devastated. And I couldn't figure out why she turned me down. I mean, I colored in the lines. My cursive was good. I knew my timetables. But still, that wasn't enough for her. But it's her loss now because I could be pushing her around and feeding her pea soup, and we would be happy in love. But that didn't happen for me. And I was heartbroken, and I saw this movie where this guy was getting over a broken heart, and how he did it was he would write poetry to kind of get over it. So I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get over my broken heart by writing some poetry. So I started writing poetry in 8th, 9th grade, and an older kid who went to high school, he saw my poems and he thought they were cute. So he was selling them at his high school. He would give me the description of a girl. I would write it. He would sell it off to a guy who didn't give it to a girl, and they would go out or whatever. And he would kick back a couple bucks to me. And, you know, in elementary school in the 80s, a couple bucks, you were balling. So I was walking into the school, like, bags of chips for everybody. I was buying out the chip bar. And so me and I needed to step my poem game up, so my vocabulary increased, writing increased, and some of the teachers noticed this. Also, at the same time, life got tough, and my family went through hardships. And for me, sometimes we were living in hotels, sometimes we were living in cars or with people. And my sanctuary was the library. So I would walk miles a day just to go to the library and have a place of peace and quiet and electricity, because at home there was no electricity. So I could go and I could read. And between this reading and writing poetry, my writing increased. And then from there, I was put on writing teams and I was winning competitions. And I kind of ignored those things. And I ignored it until even through college, people said, hey, you need to write, and I'm winning competitions. And I was more concerned about basketball. And I got this affliction on me to where I couldn't do anything but lay in a bed. And I said, what am I going to do now? I was born from doing everything to doing nothing. And I picked up my laptop, and I wrote a few words, and a few words turned into a few paragraphs until I had my first novel, To Death Do Us Part, out. And then from there, I said, what am I going to do with this manuscript? I don't know what to do with it. And I joined the International Writers Association, and some friends and I, we said, let's go ahead and start our own thing. Let's start our own company and see where it goes. And it's been a great ride ever since.
Awesome, awesome. You're hilarious. I'm gonna say that. But definitely. So as far as your writing and since you started out doing poetry and writing, selling poems for girls, for guys to get chicks and stuff like that, when it came to poetry, just briefly touch on Maya Angelou and if she had any kind of impact on you in your earlier stages of writing?
She not only had a huge impact on me, but I think she's really had an impact on everyone. And I heard earlier where you guys were talking about some people were complaining that other people didn't fully know her work, just a few things, and they were expressing their sadness. It's a testament to her. It's a testament that if people really weren't messing with poetry like that, and even though they avoided poetry, they still knew about her. She's one of the people that made poetry mainstream. I go back to when I first saw
Absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely.
It was at Bill Clinton's inauguration.
Right.
And she read that poem that just moved everybody. And at that time, poetry wasn't cool. I mean, I don't think, outside of people who really loved the poem, I'm talking about the guy who would turn on the ball game and watch the NBA Finals or something that's on. They weren't checking for poetry until that inauguration when they saw her and they saw how she affected millions, if not billions, of people around the world with her words and really got his presidency off to a good start with starting off with that. I think it helped make poetry mainstream to where we could have spoken word events and to where someone could say, yeah, I'm a poet, and people look up to that person and say, hey, this person is doing something I like. I think if it wasn't for her, poetry wouldn't be where it is right now. And
right.
Also, another thing that I admire about her is her diversity. She not only was a world-class poet, one of the greatest poets of human history, but she was a great actress. I found out she was a pretty good director. I was doing some research for my next book, and it was Down in the Delta, and I'm watching it, and I was like, look at the credits and who did what, and she directed that movie. I was talking to somebody today, and she's a very good singer, and she's a great dancer. So really, she could have had Oscars, she could have had Grammys, she could have had Tony Awards. She could have really done anything that she wanted to do. And it goes to show people that anything that's in your heart, anything that you want to do, especially coming from where she came from, you can do it. If you put in the work, if you believe, if you treat people right, your dreams can come true, and for me, being a young black kid
Lillian and Squalor and having a bologna sandwich for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I saw her up there next to the president, and I said, you know what, I can do that. If she can do that, I can get out of my situation. So she was a huge influence.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you for that. Yeah, she was, man. And you know, quite simply, if you just do, one of the things I heard her say, you know, if you just do right by people, you know, and all those things will definitely get returned to you. We have a caller already, and I believe I already know who this is, and you might be familiar with this person as well. So caller 7218, you are now live on the Conscious Creative.
Yo, yo, it's Maggie. A.K.A. Shantae for my cousin, A.K.A. Shantae.
Lorraine is in the building.
What it do?
Oh, loving this beautiful day. Loving being on this show and the topic, and I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I thought when I saw the post out there on Instagram, I was like, oh, this is going to be perfect for him. So, yeah, I guess it all worked out hand in hand. Hello, ladies.
Hello, hello.
All right, everybody's awake?
Everybody
I'm
awake.
I'm awake. I'm sorry. I'm doing jumping jacks. Are we covering right now?
And don't get him started. No, but I just wanted to call in real quick and say hello. I'm, of course, running errands and doing stuff, so I just wanted to call in real quick. I don't want to take up too much of you guys' airtime. Robert, congratulations on everything. I just, you know, a lot of people know that we are cousins. A lot of people don't know that we are cousins. However, he is my cousin on my father's side, so we really did not have a very close relationship growing up. However, as adults, we have taken it and made it our own responsibility to make sure that we have grown to know one another despite what our parents decided or not decided to do for us growing up. So one of the very first things that I knew that I had to do was help my cousin, you know, brand himself, especially since I was doing it for other individuals. So I took part in him, you know, not having to ask me and just wanting him to know that you do have family that supports you if there is no one at home supporting you. So from afar, I try to make sure that I give all the support that I can from him, and he does the same for my artist and for me as well. So I'm just very proud of him. I know what he went through, you know, just stories from him being my cousin, and just the fact that he was able to sorry, guys, I tear up talking about it, but just the fact that he was able to, you know, stay strong and, like, fight through everything and be so successful and be a role model to so many of the people in our family that need it. It brings so much joy and happiness. And I know that there's very many of us in our family that are still struggling, and there's many of us, like myself and him, that are trying very hard to put ourselves in a position where we can help so many others. So, you know, I'm proud of you, and I just want you to know that anything I can do for you, just let me know, and I'm here.
I love you, Puz, and the same thing goes for me. I'm proud of you. Whenever conversations come up here, and not only just family, but in Lorraine also, now we talk about this Team Lorraine thing, about how this person's acting, and this person's acting, and this person's writing. And I say, don't forget about one of Lorraine's daughters also, Angie Love, who is doing a phenomenal job in everything she has a hand in, and people need to be proud of you as well. And I always tell people, and I'm not going to tear up either, a lot of times in life you hear all the bad things you do and not enough good things you do. If you have a 9-to-5 somewhere, if you're a truck driver, or if you're cleaning toilets, or you're a cashier, you'll hear every little thing that you've done wrong. But if you go out of your way, you do something nice for somebody, you don't hear it enough. People don't hear, hey, good job. Or, hey, I appreciate that. So every chance I get, I always tell people what Maggie has done for me. And the biggest part for me was I was rolling out the second book, Listen to My Kaleidoscope. It got off to a hot start. Things were going well. It was selling.
Things were moving along, and then suddenly my mother passes away. We were kind of geared up for it, but it's still unexpected. And suddenly my mind switches off from being promotion, running a business, to how am I going to bury my mother? I got 30 days to come up with thousands of dollars to put her in the ground. How am I going to do this? And all my focus is on that. And with my focus on that, everything stopped just a bit. And once that ball stops rolling, it stops. It's hard to get it going again, if it ever gets going again. So when that did, she came in on social media. She made sure that ball kept going. She let people know that it's still out there. It's available, all the links and stuff. Made sure people knew that I was out there by putting it onto a radio show and doing other things. I kept that ball rolling until once I was done working with my mother, and thank God I was able to come up with the funding to get her buried and everything. Once I got back in foot mode, I was still rolling. So it's things like that that you can carry over to the next person that may be just a retweet or a post here or mentioned here that means the world. It's made the difference between my book doing really well and we're ready to roll out the third one, making preparations and agents in the world contacted me, to nothing happening and me losing my shirt and having to do something else. So sometimes it's things like that that make the world of a difference. And I'll be forever grateful to Maggie and her whole team for that.
Well, I thank you for all that.
Awesome. You good, Matt?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. I'm just listening. I'm done talking. I'm done talking. I don't want to cry anymore. I'm done talking. I love you guys. I love you, cuz, and I'll just keep on listening. That's it.
Awesome. As always, too. Matt, thank you so much, man, and we appreciate everything that you do. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So, Robert, man, like, it's so awesome to hear you talk to Maggie, man, and hear that family dynamic, man. It's so awesome that you guys are keeping each other uplifted, and doing everything that you can and overcoming adversity to continue to be you know, more, not only just for yourself but for your family. So that's definitely you know, awesome. And it's hard. It's sad to say that's not something that is commonplace for our young black men. So for you to be able to do that and lead by example, I definitely commend you for that, man.
And I also got to say, go ahead.
No, I was simply, this is Marie. I was simply agreeing with what Love just said, that oftentimes I think that we believe that the only thing we have to give is something tangible. So, you know, if it will be if I can buy a house for you once I make it, quote unquote, or if I can buy you a car, versus simply encouraging you and telling you that you can do it. And that is oftentimes what we all need, especially from the ones that we hold closest to us, because we look at our family members and we say, well, if they don't think that I can do it, then I probably cannot. And the fact that you have that support behind you and then you're giving it in return is absolutely a beautiful thing. So I wanted to say that.
And even if we weren't blood, if we weren't related, I still am a huge fan of hers. Her artists, everybody that she deals with, Darlene Burns is one of my favorite authors. She's been on my show and love her to death. Sir Nasty, International Robbie, they're all on my they're all on my iPhone. When I'm driving down the street with the top down, I'm blasting music. I'm blasting their music because they're my favorite artists. So I'm a fan of everybody that she works with, and she has a good ear and eye for talent. And I'm a huge fan of her whole organization. And I'm going to Taiwan in a couple days, and best believe I got music on CDs, and I got stuff with me that I'm gonna help people over there know about too, because it's good quality stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. It definitely is, man. It definitely is. So before we get into your latest book, Listen to My Kaleidoscope, when you first began writing, especially when you started writing your books, what was the overall picture? What was your overall goal? What did you want to accomplish, or what are you wanting to accomplish with your books?
With that first book, what I really wanted to do is I wanted to write something of quality that was entertaining, that would really get people's attention, one that would bring attention to my writing and get people to think about things. I really didn't have a conscious message, but I wanted people to kind of think outside the box. And a lot of my writing is thinking outside the box with twists and turns and subjects that maybe don't have a right or wrong answer, something that just gets you to think about it. So for Till Death Do Us Part, which came out in 2008, the idea of the book was a woman dies in a plane crash with her husband. And when she gets to heaven, she goes looking for her husband. And when she finds out that her first husband has been waiting for her this whole time, now she has a situation. She has a situation where her first husband, who was murdered, has been waiting for her the whole time. And then she has her second husband, who's somewhere in heaven that she hasn't found him yet. And the whole idea was, you know, if you marry to somebody and they're only married to you and their dream is to spend eternity with you, and then you go, that person passes away and you end up meeting somebody else and they want to spend eternity with you, what happens when you get to eternity and they both want to spend eternity with you? How does that get worked out? And some people had their opinions and they read this and they read and recite this. And for me, there was really no answer. I just wanted to throw that out there. And not only that, but there was a lot of other situations going on in heaven. One, they were expecting people to be there and they weren't. And that's the whole idea of here we may judge each other and say, well, this person's going to hell and this person's going to heaven. But we don't have that power. We don't know this. Right now, there's somebody walking this earth who we think is holier than thou, and they got their mansion already set for them, and they're not going to be there. And then there's somebody that people are looking down on and saying, that person ain't going to heaven. And they'll be there because we don't know their situation with God or what they're supposed to go through and what they're not supposed to go through. And right. So that was really the main focus is on that book. And I dedicated it to one of my dear friends. Her name is Beth. And that situation also caused me a lot of things. And again, I wanted people to think about different issues. But in this case, I just wanted to write about my friend. And I wanted a character to be based on her and that how I felt about her. And I wanted to write her the same way that she was here on this earth. I wanted to write her. I wasn't going to change anything. She was going to be who she was going to be. And the whole controversy with the first book was I wrote her to be a lesbian. And some people had an issue with it. Some people didn't. I didn't because that's my friend, so I loved her. And she was... There was nothing wrong with that as far as I was concerned, and she was going to stay the way she was going to want, that I wanted to stay. The funny thing is about that situation was, I was read halfway through the book, and her situation with that character was, she met the love of her life, as Susan Pettit, and her spouse was taken to the other side, and we know what the other side was. And she didn't know, they didn't know the reasons why, they didn't tell her, so she wasn't sure about it. But she went to the course, and she was trying to get her back, but she wasn't sure if that was a situation or if it was something else. So she had to make a decision was, do I risk going to the other side to save the one I love, or do I just kind of keep quiet? And how would she deal with that situation? And there's a certain ultra-conservative group that read halfway through the book, and they thought that I was speaking out against that. And so they emailed me, and they called me, and they we support you, brother, and all this. And I said, how many books did you guys buy? And they said, we're selling them, and we're going to support you. And I said, okay, keep selling them, and we know. And a few months later, they called back, and without giving up too much of the book, if people still want to go get it once we release it, that's not what I think. And like I said, it's pretty much the opposite of that. And they called back, and they were yelling at me and calling me every name in the book and how I tricked them. And I said, I didn't say the ending of the book in the middle of you buying them all. You should have read the rest of the book. And they said they wanted the money back. And I said, I'm not giving you money back. You can't unread the book. So I said, I'll tell you what I'll do, but
you want me to do with the money that I think will make you happy. And God ruined that. And I said, I'm going to take all my gay and lesbian friends out for a weekend vacation. We're going to have a good time on your dime. So just live with that. And that was a whole big thing that eventually gave me more attention than what they wanted to give to me. But that turned out to be a big thing. But the main point of the issue was, who do you spend the rest of your eternity with if you get into that situation?
Wow. Uh-huh. So as far as your the second book is Listen to My Kaleidoscope. I read the reviews on it. But is that kind of like a sequel? Is it a continuation of Till Death Do Us Part?
This was a separate one. A lot of people are asking me for a sequel to Death Do Us Part. I do have a somewhat of an idea in my mind, but no plans for it yet. Listen to My Kaleidoscope. What that's about is there was a time in my life where, you know, I was bedridden. I was kind of going through things while I was writing the first one. While I was bedridden, I was down. There were people in my life that tried to kick me when I was down, people at work, people that I knew in my personal life that just really tried to finish me off. And thank God that I was able to get past that and I was able to heal and overcome those situations. And once I was done with that, I said, I got some people that I need to kill in some books. I need to get this out. So I wrote a book about short stories about people that were going to die the way I thought that I wanted them to die. And, you know, I'll say God came to me and said, that's not who you are. You're not a negative person. You're a positive person. You should be writing positive things. And instead of thinking about all the people that tried to kick me when I was down, I thought about all the people that helped me when I was down, that helped me that they didn't need to help me when I needed the help. And I thought about situations in my life where I'm on the east side of Lorain, small town in Ohio, and the whole neighborhood is starving. There's a guy that was in the CJ. He'd been on a gimmick bike. He only had one eye. And he would drive down to the local convenience store. They were throwing out sandwiches that were there. He would collect those daily sandwiches. He'd ride around the east side of Lorain, passing out sandwiches like Santa Claus and Jim. And he stopped the whole neighborhood from starving. And then there was people when I was a kid and I was homeless. They took me into their homes and they fed me. They weren't related to me. They had no, they weren't my godparents. They weren't anything to me. They just did it out of the kindness of their heart. And even when I had my surgery for correcting my medical condition, there were women who picked me up, took me to their house, and left me back to health. During my whole life, there were people that were a huge influence that I wanted to thank and appreciate. So what I did is I wrote this. I rewrote the whole book, and all the characters are real characters. Instead of the fiction, the characters are real. They're about life. They're about things that we go through in life. There's subjects that talk about the death of a loved one. There's subjects that talk about finding love and spirituality and all these things that we encounter in life. Different topics like young black girls in America and how society tries to tell them they're not beautiful. Yet at the same time, that's the same demographic that is open to sexual innuendos by older people. Where there may be a girl who, she looks at a magazine and watches TV and she says, there's nobody on TV that looks like me that gets the guy, or either that or they're lusting after someone else. But they're not the main one or the girl to fall in love with. But at the same time, there's a creepy old man down the street who is looking at them from, you know, they have so much on their plate that they used to be told or encouraged and inspired, like Dr. Miami would do, is to hold on to your dreams because really you're the backbone of society. Not just black girls, but all women.
Definitely. So as far as the listen to My Kaleidoscope, what are the reviews? What have been the reviews that you've been getting as far as the feedback?
They've all been positive. Even with some of the people and reviewers that couldn't wait to just dog me out, they said, you know, I'm going to read it, but if I don't like it, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell everybody I don't like it. And I said, if it's not for you, it's fine. You can make it a gift for somebody else, but I think you'll like it. And some of the things that people liked about it is the wordplay. I'm a huge hip-hop fan, huge R&B fan, and listening to hip-hop and R&B, it's the metaphors and the similes and how you say things, and even coming out with poetry. It's how you, not only what you're saying, but how you say it. And that plays a lot of this, like kaleidoscope, where there's a lot of literary candy that I'll say that's in the book. But there's also characters in this book, topics in this book that people from all over can relate to and can understand. And chances are, no matter who you are, there's at least one of the stories in the book that you can relate to that you've either gone through or you're going through right now.
Right. I agree. I actually, this is Marie Robert, I actually had an opportunity to read an excerpt from the book, and I read the story Girlfriend Zero, and you're right, it actually put me immediately in the mind of the Temptations song, Just My Imagination.
Uh-huh.
And you guys really should read it. That one excerpt from the book makes me want to read more. It was absolutely beautifully written, and I did not expect, I didn't expect the end to be what it was. I'll say that. It's definitely a good read, and it's definitely something I'd like to read more of.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the kind words, and the majority of the stories all have a twist, and, you know, the Twilight Zone was kind of a huge influence on me. And this is sort of an emotional Twilight Zone, and I do like to kind of spark things in the brain if I can. And, you know, that story, that's something that actually really happened to me, to where there was a few years where I would go to sleep at night and I would dream about this woman. And it was almost like having a relationship while I was sleeping, and I was embarrassed to mention it to anybody. So when people would try and fix me up, you know, I was more thinking about this dream, and, you know, I really couldn't get with anybody in reality because my mind was so focused on this dream. And at the time, I was just a person that really chased after a lot of people, and you didn't see me all that thing after this person, that person. It was kind of rare. So there's only a few numbers of girlfriends I had, and we kind of labeled them girlfriend one, girlfriend two, girlfriend three. And in this case, you know, people, my close friends who knew about this, they said, I don't know if we can count this as a real girlfriend, but you're committed to this fantasy, so we're going to call her Girlfriend Zero.
Right. Because he was, I mean, since we're talking about it, he was committed to this, and I don't know if, you know, any of the other hosts that has read any of that book, but I thought it was very, very beautiful, the fact that he was willing to give up the tangible, or what we perceive as something tangible, for something for him that would be more lasting, that eternal love that the both of them were looking for. Because you saw in different parts of the story where what was happening in his heart and his mind was manifesting in the spiritual, in the physical as well. And I thought that was, I liked the way that you brought that together.
Wow, you know, I wish I could record that and take it with me, too, so when anybody asks me about that story, I can just bring out the iPhone and play it, and then there you go.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful love story. Definitely. But why was her gown torn at the end? I just have to ask that.
Pretty much,
is that significant?
Somewhat. And at the end, that world had pretty much come crashing down, to where the medical reason why it had come crashing down, the whole world is kind of tattered and torn, and she's walking along the beach, and her dress is kind of eroded away, and they're together, and they're ready to build something anew out of the rubble that happened. So when he had the medical situation, his mind kind of broken down. So the beautiful city that, and the beautiful beaches and everything that was beautiful kind of got crumpled up in ruins.
That makes sense to me now. That makes sense. So, okay, well, I'll keep asking questions. I won't ask any more questions about the book in particular, but I will say on your site you pose the question to those who visit that I want to pose to you. What do you consider to be your greatest accomplishment?
My greatest accomplishment in writing, I think there's still accomplishments that I still have yet to do. I feel like I'm still learning and improving as a writer, and there's so much that I still need to soak up from the people that are before me and
the elders that are around me. I still think that moment is still yet to come for me. But I will say probably the greatest moment so far is talking to young children. And there was a poetry contest. And one of the girls in the contest had read my book. And she came up to me, and her eyes were huge. They were the size of dinner plates. And she says, "Can you sign this book? It's my favorite book of all time. And because of this book, I hope I can be a writer." And it took me back to when I was a kid, and I was in the library, and there was a book called The Swiftly Tilting Planet. And I didn't know if the author was world famous. I didn't know if she just wrote it in her basement and sold 5 copies. I wasn't sure what her status was, but I just knew that she meant the world to me because she wrote my favorite book. And one of the reasons why I became a writer is I said, I would love for at least one person to feel that way that I felt about her that day. To have this young lady come up to me and tell me that this book meant that much to her and that it's always going to be with her. It's always going to carry in her mind for the rest of her life. For me, I don't know if it gets any better than that. Honestly, maybe I'm just saying it because other things haven't happened yet, but if I can inspire young people and children, I'd take that over a Pulitzer Prize. I'd take that over any awards, any Oscars or whatever. To have people be inspired and have that spiritual connection, I don't think it gets any bigger than that.
Yeah, definitely. That's such an amazing feeling, man. And I want to go real quick. We're running out of time. One of the stories, just adding to what Marie said, the story that I read was the story of Kiana. And I want to say that it resonated so much with me because so many times, like so often throughout life, we carry so much weight, right? And I like how you played on the word weight itself. I like how it was physical, but it was also a spiritual and a mental thing. And I love that. That's how I perceived it. And I loved how at the end you were saying, you know, how Kiana was basically saying that she felt the weight had been lifted off of her shoulders. She didn't carry the weight of the world anymore. She didn't carry her weight. She wasn't thinking about her weight as far as winning this race and going after this race. She was letting all of that go. And the more that she let it go, the faster it seemed she went. And the lighter she came. And I love that. That was, to me, that is such an amazing metaphor. You know, I mean, can you speak on that just a little bit? How you were, was that your intention to kind of play on the weight in the physical sense, but also in the spiritual and mental sense as well?
When Kiana Walton was somebody that lived here in Lorain, Ohio, and she was a young woman who had a lot of spirit. Whenever she walked in a room, she spoke positivity and having positive words and encouraging people. It sparks other lights in other people, and it empowers people to do better things. And she was a powerful person, and unfortunately, she was taken from us way too early due to gun violence. There was a guy who went to rob the gas station she was attending and senselessly, I'd say, assassinated her because she was a great person who was going to, if not do great things herself, inspire others to do great things. So she was assassinated, not just murdered. And I wanted to write something because no matter what her disposition was or where she was at, she was so positive. She had these hopes and dreams. And there's always a spot in my heart for women. And I think a lot of reasons for that was I grew up in a women's batter's shelter. My mom was battered, but we had no place to go. So she took the phone because my boyfriend hit me, and they came and picked us up, and we lived there. And I saw these women that they go through. And during the day, I worked with a lot of women that are trying to get their lives back. And I realized that, you know, all women are beautiful, and they're the backbone of our family. Yet they're so disrespected by not only men, but by the media, and sometimes other women, and they're put different labels on them, and this person is this, so they can only do this, and she's that, so this is what we think of her. And, you know, the most beautiful thing that we have in society are
others and bring them to nurture us physically, mentally, spiritually, and to just throw these bad words on them, or this person is this, or she's into this, or she has to be this, it's horrible. It's what's poisoning our society. Let women be who they are. Let them flourish, and no matter what, be proud of them and honor them, and let them continue to advance our society. And it's just a part of my heart that just aches when I see people being disrespectful to women or trying to put them in a box or stereotype them.
Right. It is an ugly cycle that we do to one another. The way that we disregard and devalue one another. And we talked about that a little earlier, and I was saying how we call one another out of our names with the bitch in the hole, and we don't realize just how much death we're putting into the atmosphere, not only about that person, but also for ourselves and as women in general. I agree with you there. And it is, and I'm sorry to hear about such a horrible way that that young woman died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But hopefully people can read the book and think differently about that and start treating our women a lot better than what we've been doing.
Absolutely.
Definitely, absolutely. Thank you so much, Robert, man. And we are running out of time, but I'm hoping that soon that we will definitely get you back on the show if you're up to that.
Anytime. I love this show. I love you guys. This was a blast. I hope to have you ladies on my show sometime, and if people want to get listen to my Kaleidoscope, so Death Do Us Part is going to be re-released this summer. They can get it anywhere, Amazon, Kobo, Kindle, but also at morewriting.com, my website. Everything is available there, the podcast, everything about me is all there.
Awesome. So how as far as other than that, social media, how can people get in contact with you?
They can email me, robert@morewriting.com, and usually I'll answer back the next day. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, pretty much every social networking site is More Writing. More has two O's, it's all one word. And if you're on Google Plus, I'm More Writing Publishing.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, Robert, man. We definitely appreciate it. And please keep doing what you're doing. Please keep writing. Please keep sharing your stories with the world, and we wish you the best of blessings and everything on your continued journey, man.
Oh, thank you very much, and it's been a privilege and honor to be on your show. It's one of my favorite shows, and I'm real grateful right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. You enjoy the rest of your evening, okay?
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Be well.
Man, it seemed like that the time went by so fast today. I guess we got really, really caught up in talking about Dr. Maya Angelou and being blessed to tap into the mind of author Robert J. Moore. But we have come to the end of our show, unfortunately. Ladies, any closing words?
This is Marie Barojo, and I just want to tell everyone thank you for listening to the show continuously. It is an absolutely beautiful thing when I get messages from the different listeners, and they don't always press one, but they will let us know what we're doing or what they would like for us to do. So continue to do that. And as always, like I always say, stay connected. Stay connected to others, to yourself, to whatever your God source is, and remember to continue loving well.
Awesome. Sage, any closing words, my love?
And again, thank you, as Marie said, to everyone who did call in. Thank you, TJ, for actually pressing that one and engaging with us. We definitely enjoy engaging with everyone. And hope to talk with you all next week. If you have any questions or if you know anyone that you think deserves to be featured on the show, feel free to let us know and definitely connect with us. We do have an IG for The Conscious Creative now, so if you're there, go ahead and follow us for every week's show. And also you can connect with me on any social media as Sage, S-A-G-E _ Maiat, M-A-A-T. Thank you, and have an amazing Sunday.
Awesome. And once again, this is Love Reigns. You can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, all that good stuff, at IAMLOVEREIGNS. I think the beautiful thing is, too, a lot of times is when people don't necessarily call in the day of the show, I love going in to see the numbers of people that call, that go back and listen to the recorded show. So please, please continue to listen, continue to support the Conscious Creative. Not only the Conscious Creative, please continue to support Maggie Love and Get Lifted Radio, Get Lifted Entertainment. They're doing some wonderful things, not only in the business, but in the community. Maggie is doing the Shorts for Shorties, which is awesome. So if you have some shorts that you want to donate for some to some underprivileged children, please contact her, follow her on Twitter and on Instagram, all that good stuff, at I-A-M-M-A-G-I-L-O-V-E. But we're going to close off, and we're going to end with, of course, some the best advice that Maya Angelou has ever given and that she received. So this is for you, Dr. Maya Angelou. Thank you for everything that you did, not only for me, but for everyone that's out there. Thank you for your inspiration. Thank you for your jewels. Thank you for your...
In 2000, when you were 72, I interviewed you for the magazine, and I asked you if you considered yourself wise, and at the time you answered, well, I'm en route.
That's true.
And how would you answer that now?
I'm en route.
You're still
en
route.
I'm further along than I was. But I'm still en route.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when I know enough. I know a lot, and I'm grateful for that. I know enough to try to live what I know.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a lot.
Well, that's a lot.
But I still don't have it all.
What do you think that you, Maya Angelou, everybody who quotes you and I quote you and then they quote me to you and all, what do you think is the best piece of advice you've given?
Well, Well, I'm thinking that the best advice I've ever given, I hope, was that which I gave to my son when he was growing up. He said, I don't have any friends. How can I get some friends? And although I was very young, I told him two things. I told him, in order to get a friend, you have to be a friend. Be ready to be a friend. And also I told him, there's a place in you that you must keep inviolate. You must keep it pristine, clean, so that nobody has the right to curse you or treat you badly. Nobody, no mother, father, no wife, no husband, no nobody. Because that may be the place you go to when you meet God. You have to have a place that you say, stop it. Back up.
Not
you
here
must
anymore.
Not know.
No.
Absolutely. And that's one I told you 25 years ago.
Yes.
Say no when it's no.
Yeah.
Say so. Back it up. Because that place has to remain clean and clear.
And that has to be a place within yourself.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. That is the best advice. I know everybody who's watching is going to say, when people show you who they are, believe them. That's also very good.
It is good now.
Yeah. But nothing tops having the place inside yourself.
That's right.
That nobody else.
Nobody
has
a right
to invade.
No.
Yes.
And when the person comes with rude language to you or invasive language to you, you have to be able to say, back up. Not me, you don't. Don't you know I'm a child of God?
What is the best piece of advice you've ever gotten?
So many good things.
I know.
Yeah. I guess the greatest advice is to forgive.
Mm.
I don't anoint it with anything. I just forgive it.
But don't we forgive? I've tried to let people know on the show, as you have taught me over the years, that when you forgive somebody, doesn't mean you want to sit down and invite them to your table.
No.
No.
Indeed not.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean I'm finished with you.
You're done.
Go away.
Yes.
Yes, you go away. Now, I don't say go away and harm somebody else, but I do have to protect myself. I look like a ninny if I ask somebody else to protect me, and I'm not willing to protect myself.
Yeah, that's one of the great lessons that you've taught me too. If you got to be willing to take care of this first.
Yes, ma'am.
Then you have enough to
yes,
give to
yes,
other people.
Ma'am.